This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard, given on the 19th of May, 1961. The title of this lecture is E-Meter. This tape is 95 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Thank you. Well, now we've gotten ourselves a few cases moving along. And every time I see you, why, you're less plowed in. This is Operation Reverse the Furrowing. Okay, let's see, what is this? This is the 19th of May, 1961. This is St. Hill Special Briefing Course. Now, once upon a time there was a knucklehead. Once upon a time. And he kept doing things to people. And then a few trillion years later, he said they'd all been done to him. I'll give you an example of this. In a moment. But right now, I want to talk to you something about E-meters and assessments. This is very, very important. I'll tell you more about this knucklehead. The E-meter is a very peculiar instrument. It is absolutely accurate. But when somebody is so knuckleheaded as not to ask the right questions, of course, it apparently gives wrong answers. An E-meter is as accurate as the auditor asks the right questions. It itself is totally accurate. But you have to find out what it is talking about. And it is not necessarily talking about what you were talking about as the auditor. But it is talking about something, and the probability is that it is very close to what you're talking about when it's talking sporadically, but not quite it. And when you ask the right question, the E-meter then reads hard and consistently. But the near right question reads inconsistently. So when you get inconsistent reads, your question is not quite right. That is a general rule. Not quite right. But when you ask the right question, the E-meter will then tell you it's the right question by reading consistently. You can ask for a withhold, something on this order. You can say, well, are you withholding anything about your house? And the E-meter will go click. And now this fellow who comes down the track, all these trillennia, having burned houses, massacred the inhabitants of houses, having chewed up the landscape of houses in general in many wars and many lives, knows very well that it's a house. And he becomes completely fixated on the idea that he must ask the question about the house. The house, the house. And the E-meter goes, flick, foo. Flick, foo. No read. Read, no read. All right, what about this house are you withholding? And the E-meter goes, flick, and then no flick. And then theta bops, and it goes, no answer at all. And then it goes, totally no. And this fellow who knows very well that it is about a house, he says, is it a big house or a little house?
and the E-meter goes flick, and it goes flew, and it goes null, and it goes this and that. Just nothing seems to happen, that's all. Nothing seems to happen. And then the DP or somebody, whose specialty was burning down barns. Gets the PC in and says, well, now you seem to have a withhold here. We don't seem to find out what it is. Is it about barns? And there's a flick and a flew and a gnaw. And a DOP says, you see now, you knuckle-headed auditor, you missed it. It's about barns. And there it goes. But the thing doesn't clear. And the PC says, no, I've never done anything to barns. Oh, it must be barns, must be barns. It's just, come on, confess. What is it? Barns, barns. It must be barns. Has to be barns. Everybody knows, what do you do with barns? You burn them down when they're full of stock. Always produces a hell of an ARC break in the vicinity when you do that sort of thing. Leave the house alone, but burn the stock up. Oh, that's best. And nothing's going to happen either way. Because they haven't learned this rule. The E-meter reacts and clears on the exact right question. That's what it reacts and clears on. But it will give you an indicator. It is nice enough to tell you you're getting warm. But when you don't get a consistent read on an E-meter, you are just warm. You're not red hot. When you're right on it, it'll read consistently, and it will clear at once that the PC comes up with what it is. That is on a security check. And if it is the chain on which the PC is totally plowed in on, from one end of the track to the other, it will just go on reading and reading and reading until it's audited. The rule is, you have to audit things that don't clear on a question. That is the rule, a general rule, where it comes to auditing, or where it comes to clearing rudiments. You say to the PC, something or other, and you get a paw on the rudiments. And you say, well, do you have a withhold? What is falling on? Are you withholding anything? And the PC says, no, the E-meter goes clink, clank. It'll go falling on just about what it's falling on just exactly what it's falling on. And you start probing for this thing. And all of a sudden you say, well, is it something about me? Your fall becomes steadier and more consistent. And then the PC said, well, yes, last night I told somebody you were a bad auditor. The fall disappears. But the knucklehead then audits it. Having cleared the meter, he now goes in to what have you done, what have you withheld? You got the meter clear on rudiments. Why are you trying to do anything else? The rule about rudiments is simply this. Rudiments are there not to run the case, but they are there solely and only to set up the PC so that he can be audited and will stay in session. Definition of which is willing to talk to the auditor and interested in own case. And that is what you're trying to get him to do. And if the rudiments are too flagrantly out, it won't happen. But setting the meter on a third of a dial drop and going over the rudiments, if you do not get a wild or significant fall, you just leave them alone. You know, with a third of a dial drop, you can't see some of the meter reactions. So you just blind yourself to that much meter reaction. That meter reaction, which you cannot see at a third of a dial drop, will not get the PC out of session. Have you got that? It will not take the PC out of session. So advancing the sensitivity knob to a point where you get a 16 dial drop on a can squeeze, and then clearing the rudiments of every flick on that enormously expanded scale, you just waste an audit. Because clearing them all up, you're running the case with rudiments. But if you clear rudiments on a third of a dial drop, and mind you, do that carefully, when you set the meter with a third of a dial drop, why, you don't see any fall, any theta bop or anything. Mind you, there'll be falls and theta bops are there, but they're obscured by the fact that you're reading from the still needle. You follow me? You told the guy to squeeze the cans. Cans, squeeze, you got a third of a dial drop. You just leave the sensitivity knob right there. Ask for the rudiments. It doesn't move. Now a little flick. While you got it set at a third of a dial drop, you'd investigate. If it did move it, you would investigate it. But usually a little flick like this just blows up. I mean, you have a present time problem? Yes, I have a present time problem. Worry about going out and putting in a pound note into the parking meter or whatever the police are demanding these days. Well, do you have to do that now? Well, no, I don't have to do it for half an hour. Well, would it be all right if at a half an hour I remember it and send you down there? Yes, that would be fine. Drop this pin. Do you have a withhold? Yeah, no. You get a fall, get a flick, get a theta bop. You better find out what it is. But that's on the sensitivity knob set at a third of a dial drop. Now, if your sensitivity knob was set at 16, and you got the equivalent of, you know, the can squeeze drives the needle across and bounces off the pin, you know, that's actually probably set for about 5 or 10 dials of drop on one can squeeze. Now you ask him, do you have a withheld? Well, hell, you can even read his heart beating. See? It'll register this closely. Are you withholding anything? And 42 trillion years ago, he shot down a pilot in flames and was very careful not to let his own body drop or get burned up. So he's withholding his own body, you see. So are you withholding anything? Yes, you get a reaction. But look, that reaction is his case, and it is not adequate to stop a PC from going into session. You got it? The purpose of the rudiment, 100% the purpose of the rudiments are only these: to set up the case so that it can be audited. The purpose of the rudiment is not this, to run the case. That's not the purpose of the rudiment. There are numberless things I could tell you about rudiments, but ordinarily, in ordinary auditing, it totally suffices to make sure you get all of the falling or observable ARC breaks, problems, withholds off, and objections to the room. You see, that's totally adequate. If they fall, get them off with the sensitivity knob set for a third of an hour. Oh, well, how about the E-meter that can't be retreated on its sensitivity? I'm afraid you've got a rebuild coming. There isn't anything you can do to the meter. Apparently, I was experimenting with it last night, but put a new sensitivity rheostat in it. That could be done rather cheaply. HCO will do it for you. But after a person gets about halfway clear, a can squeeze on old meters at zero, old British meters is what it mainly is, when the sensitivity knob is set way down, all as low as it can be set, you get a dial drop. And you're running somebody like that? Now what are you going to do? Now what are you going to do? This rule no longer is observable. What you're going to do is get a new rheostat put in the E-meter that can be turned down to a third of a dial drop, okay? Simple, huh? And meanwhile, before you do that, if it falls on a rudiment, sigh and clean it up. because you're not going to be sure whether it needs cleaning up or not. So you have to use judgment as to whether or not it needs much cleaning up. In the first place, people who fall well on a can squeeze, they aren't bothered as much as some other people by ARC breaks, unless they're being audited by some auditor on whom they have a lot of charge. Then they'll ARC break. But the usual cotton-picking ARC breaks that don't amount to anything, they don't really terribly disturb them. The better off a case gets, the less it's disturbed by the environment. Definition of a clear is he can handle the environment and isn't disturbed by it. So, of course, as you start progressing toward clear, the can squeeze gives you a greater and greater fall for the test. And the nearer a person gets to clear, well, the more drop you will see on a can squeeze with the sensitivity knob set as it used to be. Originally, the fellow comes in, you turn the sensitivity knob up to 16, you put the cans in his hands, and he gives the can squeeze, and it falls a 32nd of a dial. Well, this fellow's going to endure. He's obviously built out of solid oak. The same setting, if you care to observe a meter, running SOP goals. Supposing you did a long and thorough assessment. You wouldn't do a thorough assessment on this guy. You wouldn't do an assessment at all. You would do a Joburg security check. And then you would give him a general run on the pre-have scale. And you'd clear up some levels on the pre-have scale, just general, you see. And then when you got so it was looking much better and the tone arm was reading much better, and you knew you weren't reading a dead thetan, and you did get a little bit of a drop on the can squeeze and so forth, you could go ahead and assess him. So you go ahead and you complete your assessment, and you'll notice suddenly that it's sitting at a fairly low sensitivity setting, and a third of a dial drop occurs very easily. The case is much looser. The needle is much looser. Can you follow this? All right. That's the way you handle rudiments and handle an E-meter. But Mr. E-meter will tell you that you are close if it's answering sporadically. But if you're answering dead on, you'll have this interesting experience. You are running a Joburg security check. And you ask the level, you ask the precise level, have you ever raped anyone? And the needle falls in response to that question. A Joburg security question falls something on the order of about a quarter of a dial. And the PC says no, and it falls a quarter of a dial. And you say to him, well, have you ever really raped anyone? And it falls a quarter of a dial. Now listen, you can go down the list of all the things he might possibly have raped or done sexually that might be considered rape, or anything of the sort. And if it's not exactly on, the exact same fall will continue. On a withhold, you've got a reversal of the rule. The E-meter falls in response to the question. In this case, it continues to fall if the question isn't asked. So there are two phenomena in which you're involved here. One is you have to ask the right question to get the fall, the exact right question to produce the consistent fall, and the other one is to get rid of the fall. You understand? And that requires communication from the PC. And in failure to communicate, it won't go away. Don't think your meter's busted because you were asking this question. And hours later, he just never seemed to get through a Joburg security check. He will always get the same fall. Always, 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 forever, practically till the end of the world, would he get the same question, have you ever raped anyone? You can ask him, is it this lifetime? And you get the fall. Did you rape somebody in this lifetime? You get the fall. Did you rape somebody in your family? You get the fall. You understand? He has raped somebody. That is it. You have asked the right question. Now, having asked the right question, you see, is one part of this comment. The only way you'll get rid of the fall is for the thing to be answered. So first, there's the right question that produces the fall. And the second phase of it is the answer that eradicates the fall. And it must be, surprise, surprise, the exact answer. The precision instrument, called the E-meter, depends then upon the exact question to get the response and the exact answer to clear it. Now, do you follow me? Now, the individual who continues to fall on a certain terminal is so involved in electrical masses, exchanges, energies, and so forth in the mind that that terminal has to be audited. Only then do you get rid of it. So it is not, in that case, just the one right answer. It's enough thousand right answers to clear it. Therefore, when the pre-clear does not give you the exact answer to the auditing command every time, you will continue to get it to read, and auditing will continue to infinity. You must get an answer for every auditing question. And it must be the answer to the question you asked. Otherwise, it continues to read on the meter. Well, you're not fighting the meter. The meter only indicates what's still banging in the fellow's mind. In other words, a pre-clear could be audited for 10,000 hours without ever answering the auditor's question and still be reading the same way on an E-meter. How do you like that? You got that? So that a case that hangs fire falls into just these categories. A present time problem is there consistently and forever. This is what you call a hidden standard sort of a thing. The guy's got a long duration present time problem, and he knows when he will get better. It's when his hair stops standing up when he sees a horse. And he waits for this endlessly to start happening. He tests out his auditing results. He has an intensive, and he goes and he finds a horse. And he very carefully puts his hand back here, and he looks at the horse. And if his hair doesn't stand up, he says, I got some progress. And if his hair does stand up, he says, well, that auditor's a bum. I think I'm joking. But that is true of every case that walks the street that is having a rough time, that's by a hidden standard. So part of your goals assessment must always get out these hidden standards into view. Hidden standard is our technical term. The PC will call them problems of long duration, if they're fairly sane. But they also respond to things of difficulties in life. A word I commend to you as very useful. Are you having any difficulties in life? Now, what difficulty would have to change for you to know that the auditing was working? Or more broadly, what difficulty would you no longer have if Scientology worked on you? What difficulty would have to happen in order for you to know that auditing was working? You got that? This is the hidden standard. I'll show you what happens when you don't address the hidden standard. The individual, very nicely, goes through a whole auditing session. Gets along just dandy through the auditing session. Gets along splendiferously. Seems to be making progress. And at the end of the session said, I didn't make any part of my goals. Well, maybe the goal that he gave you at the beginning of session was just to sit there throughout the session. And you look at this in utter amazement. He did sit there throughout the session. He must have made his goal for the session, but he tells you he didn't make any part of his goals. Well, you're an utter knucklehead if you don't consult your E-meter and say, do you have any particular gains that you will have to make or establish in order to know that auditing is working? And if so, what would they be? Well, if you ask me that, yes, as a matter of fact, yes, I do that. You see, every time I look at a horse, my hair stands up on end. And I feel right now, actually, that if I did look at a horse, my hair would still be standing up on end when I looked at the horse. He's got every single auditing command you have given him circuited this way. He audits women so that he will correct his relationship with horses. He puts a via on every command answer. One man we found had actually, for something on the order of 500 or 600 hours at least of auditing, he addressed every auditing command through this electronic engram in the firm and utter and complete belief that it would change him from being a man to a woman. And what was the answer to this question? What would have to happen in order for auditing to work? This fellow's answer was, I would have to become a woman. Now that's what you're going up against when you ask the PC, are you making any progress? And don't let me catch any of you going out of here and auditing anybody after this up against a bunch of hidden standards that are utterly unknown to you. Just don't let that happen, because that is silly. It means that the PC violates this e-meter thing. He is not giving an answer to the auditing command. He is taking the auditing command, fitting it to something else, and then answering his impressions. Of course, your needle doesn't clear. Not only does your needle doesn't clear, your tone arm doesn't move. The case does not progress. The dead Thetan reading at 2 never reads any place else than 2. Your E-meter characteristics don't change. Your needle does not get looser. Your sensitivity knob does not have to be set lower. If your E-meter isn't shifting during the course of auditing, the first thing to suspect is that you yourself have got the wrong curve on this. See, there's something wrong. You goofed somehow. You did a prehab assessment. Said, well, the fellow is obviously resisting everything, so the obvious level is resist, and you just went on by, knew it was Barnes, and you went right on by and ran resist, and the tone arm didn't change, and nothing changed, and wrong level. Bum assessment. You get the idea? Bum assessment will give you that. You aren't asking the right questions. Or the individual has one of these hidden standards of long duration and so forth, and he addresses everything around it. A PC will not improve if he has a present time problem of long or short duration, which is absorbing all of his attention. He will not improve in auditing. So you might as well take care of it and get it out of the way right now. He will not improve if he has withholds. Poetically, God help him, he will not exclamation point improve if he has overts on his auditor, he is not disclosing. If he has overts on Scientology, he's not disclosing. If he has overts on the principles of Scientology. For some reason, not because we dreamed it up, because it happens to be true, I scouted this out the first time many, many years ago, by 1954. Most of the returns were in for the people who had attacked Dianetics. There were about 21 of them in the United States who had, well, a lot of them had actually taken money to do us in. And were still with us. With the exception of 17 who were either in jail or dead. And as they made up a primary death list for that particular time and a primary difficulty list, I looked for some common denominator amongst them to find out what this was all about. And there was only one common denominator. Some of them had literally had, in the period of 4 years, hundreds and hundreds of hours of auditing. In the case of Joe Winter, over 1,000 hours, I'm sure. Maybe even 2,000 hours of auditing. And the common denominator of all those people is they'd never made a single case gain in all their auditing. That was the first time this one showed up. It's a grim and ghastly thing. It's a built-in automatic protective mechanism in Dianetics and Scientology. The fellow who accepts money or goes out of his way to injure auditors, organizations, the subject, principles in it, has just plain condemned himself to eternity. That's all. He just condemned himself to an eternity. There he is, going on down. Honest, that sometimes it makes me gasp because I've gotten so much data on this by this time, at the actual adventurousness of how some of these characters will swap a couple of quick sixpences for the next 200 trillion. Doesn't look to me like a good bargain. Now, oddly enough, strangely enough, a primary fault I have is honesty. I will tell you what I know, or what I think I know, when I know it. And if I find out it isn't true, I will tell you it isn't true. And if it happens to be discreditable along the line, I'm afraid I will tell you. Along with that goes the necessity, I would say better, has gone the necessity to keep enough hope going to get the job rounded up. That has been part of the responsibility. To have not done so would have been an overt act. Now, I frankly tell you, I would not tell you that there was a self-protective mechanism in Dianetics and Scientology out of an anxiety to protect Scientologists, organizations, and the principles of Scientology, and the people at the top of it. I just wouldn't tell you that, that's all. In the first place, I don't believe I'm so weak that I would need such a mechanism to protect it, or to protect you, you see. And for this other thing to be built up, as an inside, built up, completely arranged, booby trap mechanism, is always filling me with a little surprise. I think if you listen to a lot of tapes, you'll hear me being surprised about this in other lectures. It's the darndest thing I ever saw. It's just horrible. It's utterly horrible. Gracie Zilch goes out and does in an auditor. Busts up his marriage and spoils his repute. And for the next 1,000 hours of auditing, Gracie Zilch is right where she is, or worse. And nobody seems to be able to do a single thing for Gracie Zilch. Isn't that remarkable? It is just fantastic. Now, religious organizations have tried desperately to protect themselves with things like blasphemy and protect themselves with other you must nots and thou shalt nots. You know, everybody talks about the Ten Commandments. Have you ever counted them? In an actual original Old Testament, there aren't Ten Commandments. Columns of them. Thou shalt not eat pork. That has been uncleanly raised, or something of this sort. Thou shalt sell it to a traveler instead. What it amounts to is you can't look for help from a quarter on which you have tremendous overts, even though the help were given you, no matter how gratuitously, it wouldn't be accepted by you. Because it's always looked on as a betrayal. Why is it looked on as a betrayal? Because one has betrayed that help. So, of course, when one is audited under these conditions, he has this remarkable frame of mind, that everything anybody is saying or doing to him is calculated to betray and destroy him. So the more he is treated, the worse he gets. Now, that happens to be our little built-in self-protective mechanism. Now, because we are the only science of mind that has ever come up the line, and sat back on its haunches and proved itself across the board, we can also undo that. If we want to take enough trouble, we can also save Gracie Zilch. One auditor sits on her head and the other straps the cans to her feet, and a third, as she's being held down, locates what she has been doing on an e-meter using something like a Joburg or something like this, you see, and actually gets the thing taped out and then finally says, well, Gracie, we've got the goods on you. And now why don't you go off someplace and realize that if you don't do something decent about this, you're sunk. And I don't care, it might take 2 hours, 2 years, or 2 lifetimes. Sooner or later, she's going to come in and tell all. Fascinating, huh? We can undo it. So in a little tiny, microscopic way, not accepting $500,000 from the Communist Party of America to do in a central organization, that, of course, killed a man. I bet you right now he's tagging around in a schoolroom someplace or another, wondering what is wrong with him and why he feels so spinny. A fellow by the name of Don Purcell. He died. He did this, and for 3 years he just went on a toboggan and died. One of the reasons was is nobody was interested enough to even try to do anything for him. The other thing was he had made it impossible to arrive at that data earlier by causing such a tremendous disturbance that he slowed up research. I felt like telling him one time, I just sort of felt it in my bones. I felt like telling him once or twice, look, maybe someday your wife's going to get sick, or your kids are going to get sick, or something's going to go really wrong in your existence, and you're going to need us like mad. You see? And here you are doing nothing but getting us so upset and disturbed that we actually can't do very much in the way of research, and you're slowing us down. Maybe someday we will know something that you really need to know desperately. And sure enough, it happened to work out. Of course, there is this. I would say that it wasn't totally probably the overt withhold mechanism. I think Susie's postulates. Because if she ever wanted to see a man dead, it was that man. Anyway, let's get over to some more about this e-meter now. Do you see that if this, on a much more dramatic basis, can exist, your failure to find out your auditor has, pardon me, your PC has been nattering about his auditor between sessions, your failure to find this out while running rudiments is to throw away a session. Do you see that? Because just as it isn't very terribly important, so it isn't very hard to pick up. But it is important enough to knock a whole session out, or maybe a whole intensive out. So when they've got withholds in life, in general, which separates them from the human race and all livingness, or in particular, when they have withholds on the auditors, central organizations, people in the central organizations, you see, there goes the case. There goes the intensive. There goes the session. You want to do something for this guy, this guy will give you a failure. Why? Not because of anything that you did to him particularly, but because he just goes around nattering about it. When people are not clear, if they know this perfectly, they actually go around sort of holding themselves in a frozen, don't think anything bad, don't think any bad thoughts, you know. And then when they get a little bit better, they relax and they think real vicious thoughts. And then they give them up as withholds. That's a sort of a revenge in itself. And then later on, if they happen to have done something that they found out the auditor, you know, and realize suddenly that the auditor wouldn't like it or something like this, well, you ask them for it and they give it to you. So overts are more difficult to clean up, that is, withholds, overts which are withheld, are more difficult to clean up, the worse off a case is. It's proportional. They go down into not realizing what an over it is, and they will go out and do some of the wildest things. The psycho band will go out and do some of the most incredible things and not consider them overts at all. They won't fall on a meter. So here's a modification on your third of a dial drop. You set it for a third of a dial drop and run the rudiments. But your third of a dial drop only goes for those rudiments and the assessment which don't consist of getting off withholds. So when you get that withhold, reach over here, crank up your sensitivity, ask for the withhold, and strip it. Good, you see. But if it is too active on withholds, and it's going bang, 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 and you don't clear it right away by asking what it is, Joburg security check. You don't run anything further than the rudiments than that. In other words, run the rudiments, and then enter into Joburg security check. By the way, Joburg security check is done in model session form. It's not done outside of model session form. Nothing is these days. There isn't anything done outside of model session these days. Nothing. So your rule about the sensitivity knob is that the only exception to a third of a dial drop, and I tell you this very advisedly, the only exception in running SOP goals and its preparatory steps to the third of a dial drop setting is when you are after withholds. And of course that includes at once the Joburg security check, and it includes the withholds and the rudiments. You've got it? That makes it very easy, doesn't it? Magnify your read when you're after withholds. If you're not after withholds and you're just generally assessing, third of a dial drop. If you're auditing and running, third of a dial drop. If your meter insists on dropping more than a third of a dial drop, get a new sensitivity rheostat installed in it. I'm afraid there is no other answer. I'm going to be in very, very hot communication with our manufacturers, making sure that it can be cut down to where it would almost read in reverse on a bad off case. You know, it just read in reverse. You know, by the way, it's because you can't get your sensitivity up high enough that you get the reverse can squeezes. That is the usual action. It reads backwards. Did you ever see a guy rise when you squeeze the can? Well, you just haven't got enough sensitivity on it. You can get the sensitivity up. And if the sensitivity can't be gotten up high enough, he will still reverse. Get the sensitivity up high enough, I think. No, I suppose. You get rid of that. All right. Now, in assessing for goals, assessment by elimination, you, of course, then set the meter for a third of a dial and drop. Why is this? If it is set for more than a third of a dial drop, you are auditing the case, not assessing them. You are auditing a process known as erasing goals by repeater technique. You see that? It would be erasing goals by repeater technique, and it's not a very good process. It isn't necessarily harmful. As a matter of fact, it will benefit a case, but it's very lengthy. And it can go on for a very long time. Now, what you're trying to do in assessment by elimination is get them so they don't read with the meter set for a third of a dial. Once more, if your meter can't be retarded far enough on the sensitivity knob, why, you'll just have to get your meter fixed. So it will. Because an assessment by elimination is not a process by which you seek to reduce the goal to no electronic reaction in the mind. It is only this. It seeks to null the goal so that it only does not act on an E-meter, which is set for a third of the dial drop. You got it? And it permits you then to get the goal which will fall and fall and continue to fall and go on and fall that has to be addressed by auditing. The only thing you're trying to do is that. Now, we have proved out this fact that if you erase all of a person's goals, the person still has a goal which falls, still one goal that falls. If it's erased, you see, that's a valuable datum. Let's not lose it. If you erase by repeater technique every goal a person came up with, the person would still have one goal. That's interesting, isn't it? All right. You don't have to erase them all to have just one goal. You have to know them on a meter set with a third of a dial drop, and if you do, you will still have the goal. The one goal. You understand? See, it's different. It isn't actually erasing them. It is actually erasing them as far as the meter is concerned. You see, just take the edge off so they don't fall. Well, that's it. And it gives you a fast assessment. Rapid assessment. This is mainly in the interest of speed. That's all it's in the interest of. I imagine if this were 1325, when people had a great deal more time or something like this, or on some planets like Jupiter, we'd probably be trying to find out how could assessment take more time. If the psychoanalysts were doing this, of course, at 60 pounds the hour or something like that, they'd try to figure out how to stretch the assessment. Well, the way you stretch the assessment is very simple. All you have to do is turn up your sensitivity knob to about 16, and every time the person comes up with a goal, or every time you ask for any more goals, you, of course, get a read. See? You go over the goal, and with the thing set up very high, why? You say, all right, you wanted a set of paper dolls. And the thing falls quite well. But if you turn the sensitivity knob down for a third of a dial drop, you're reading from a still needle. And the impact in the mind on the subject of acquiring paper dolls is inadequate to move that from a still needle. So for your assessment purposes, it is null. You got it? So you can go over, in that wise, you can go over literally dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of goals. Now, in one session, you get lots of them. And you get down to the end, and because your sensitivity set is low, you say, do you have any more goals? Well, obviously, for God's sakes, the person has any more goals. Realize that it's a limited question. It's limited in its application. It's not a true question. Do you have any more goals? Well, now, look. This person's been around for the trillennia. Every life they had several hundred goals. Well, all right, what are you going to do? Multiply 500 times 200 trillion. And what is that? That's your goals list. All you're after is a no fall at the end of the list with a sensitivity knob set for a third of a dial drop. That's the only thing you're after. You can go over the various kinds of goals. You say, got any childhood goals? Are there any more childhood goals? Are there any more withheld goals? Secret goals? Are there any more antisocial goals? Have you thought of anything that would have to happen for you to know that Scientology works? Are there any difficulties you haven't mentioned to me? And look, by the time you got all of those that I just gave you, practically in order, listed, and you get down to the end of the list and you ask all of those categories again, and you get no fall, to your naked eye, you see no twitch. And don't tell me that if the needle rises, you go on, because that's getting to be a very sore point. It keeps coming in over the lines and so forth. The needle was rising, so I had to continue to run the rudiments. And somebody just today spotted that. It's because it's in the TRs. The E-meter TR has in it rise as a reaction. How many reactions are there to a needle? And rise is one of them. And then you say, if you run the rudiments and you get a needle reaction, you must flatten the rudiments. And the auditor applies these two things. Bing, bing. When we say a reaction for the rudiments, or a reaction for an assessment, we mean a rock slam, a theta bop, or a fall. In order of importance, it is a rock slam, a fall, or a theta bop. A theta bop is the least important. A fall is the most ordinary. And if you're getting rock slams, watch out, because the whole bank is grouped. Remember the old Dianetic grouper? Well, the old Dianetic grouper, if we'd had people on E-meters in those days, would always have registered as rock slam. It's just a grouper in time, and a grouper in place, and a grouper in mass, and a grouper in this and that. And so you get a rock slam. In passing, just while I'm thinking about it, I better tell you something about running a rock slam. If you're assessing and getting rock slams on the pre-half scale for a terminal, let's say the goal rock slammed. You know what a rock slam is now. It's an irregular, wobbly, large or small shiver and shake across the thing. A theta bop is a very regular one of any width. But a rock slam is a shiver and shake, and it dances around, and it's very jerky, and it's quite unmistakable. Once you've seen a rock slam, they're quite weird. When you see these things turn on, you say, what in the name of God is that? These little tiny needle shivers that you see are probably microscopic rock slams. I don't really think they're a different breed. There's a point of adjudication here. Do you just run the rock slams off? Do you assess it as long as you don't have a rock slam? And run it as long as you don't have a rock slam? Assess it for the rock slam? Run it until you don't have the rock slam? You could do that, you know. This is not a hard and fast point. Because the rock slam is going to turn into a fall. It's going to turn into a theta bop. It's probably going to go no. The liabilities of doing that is you've got a rock slam left someplace else on your pre-half scale. There's a matter of adjudication. We'll have more data on this someday, in the very near future. But I would say, knowing the nature of a rock slam, that if you just followed rock slam and ran the rock slam off so that you didn't get a rock slam in 20 minutes, or something like that, the case might make better progress. But we'll find out more about that. That's not a hard and fast rule at this time. It's just this. When you're running a rock slam, remember you're running probably a very short duration. If you could hold a rock slam with your tone arm so that the needle continued to sit solidly at set, what would the tone arm be doing? Yeah, it'd be quite a wild tone arm, wouldn't it, huh? Well, that would be the one thing you can't read on a tone arm. You have to read it over on the needle, because just because you can't do that with a tone arm. You see, theoretically, when I say process by the tone arm, I mean keeping the needle somewhere in the vicinity of set. And that gives you your tone arm motion. Well, a rock slam, you can't keep the needle in the vicinity of set. You see? The tone arm would be slamming. Well, certainly you're going to run a tone arm slam. You can't set a meter for a tone arm slam. So that's what you'd run flat. You got the idea. You could run the tone arm slam flat. And if you assessed again, you'd find the rock slam has now gone elsewhere. It's a matter of adjudication. It's a matter to be proved out. It's a matter to be settled. But that is a point. And I'd better tell you what points really don't exist in clear-cut silhouette relief. Now, what do we get into here when we ask the wrong question on an E-meter? We're asking the fellow for goals, and it's the wrong goal. The therefore it's the wrong question. And you get a sporadic read, and the gold seems to peel off and disappear. A meter actually will react only as long as things are bunched up. And as you're assessing for goals, when you first grab a hold of the PC, the goals are all in one terrific mauled up ball, you see. And so any goal is doing a dance. But as you repeat these goals with the thing set for a third of a dial ball, the goal peels off the main mess. It comes free and becomes itself. And as you go over goals list over and over, and later, same way with terminals, a terminals list over and over, you're going to find this as a persistent and continuing manifestation. That the wrong questions peel off and the right question remains. So that is true of an e-meter. If you always knew the right question to ask, you would always get the same thought. But at the same time, the assessment has therapeutic value, something for you to remember. If you just assess somebody, maybe he's in lousy condition and really isn't ready for assessment and so forth. If you just assess him and you do a good job of assessment on him, you're going to get an improved case and he's going to feel better about things. An assessment cannot then be classified as something which must be done to set up an intensive. Similarly, a Joburg security check, if run well by the auditor, with a nice gunned-up sensitivity knob, is terrifically therapeutic. Terrific. And once more, could not be considered something by which you set up a case to audit it. These things all fall within the perimeter of auditing, because they are therapeutic, they are beneficial. They advance cases. Let me tell you that just this one thing of a Joburg security check has advanced cases that have never before moved. Why did they never before move? They're sitting there holding on to their cotton picking with holes. I mean, with holes were so heavy that they couldn't communicate to the auditor, so they were never in session. So auditing never worked. So you can't call a Joburg security check then something that occurs outside of intensives or outside of auditing unless it is being used for purposes of security. And then, of course, you don't do it in model session form. Just find out whether this guy's safe to have around, that's all. If the questions all clear up, voila. He's safe to have around, providing you know how to do a Joburg security check. That's the other little proviso that you must be awfully sure of. Some of you, or maybe all of you, will someday have the experience in Scientology. If you got a new HGC admin, or you've got a clerk, or something like that. You've taught them the this's and that's of things. And you're too busy to give this new applicant a security check yourself, or everybody else is too busy, and you can't turn them over to a good auditor to do this security check. And you say, well, you know the rudiments and you know how to do this, so you just go ahead and give them a security check. And you're going to find out where my viewpoint sometimes is. In total bafflement of how anybody can invent as many ways of doing something wrong. And my viewpoint is very often on that total bafflement. I know why it happens, so that it doesn't continue to baffle me very long, and it doesn't upset me, but it is still something to marvel about. If you were to take somebody and give them an hour's instruction on the e-meter, show them about the needle, and then turn over some raw meat off the street and tell them to give this person a security check so you'd know whether the person could be hired or not. Your usual response is not, the person is all right. The usual response is, he couldn't possibly be hired. If inept people were running e-meters at all sides to do security checks for the purpose of employment, You could guarantee this. The whole world would at once be out of work. Various things happen, but the category of them are utterly in the thousands. And there's no sense in going over the number of things they can do wrong, except those things which are rather common errors, or which can be used to clarify the right way. Then you can go over things that are wrong. But otherwise, if you list all the things that are wrong or could be done wrong with an e-meter, you'd probably be up around 10, 15,000 items. That's colossal. For instance, simple error like this. The person they're checking breathes. This is rather strange and peculiar amongst the human race, particularly people in London. They know better. But they breathe. So every time they take a breath, the meter isn't set right probably, and every time they take a breath or a deep breath, or even if the meter is set right, every time they sigh, you're going to get a fall. And if the person were doing it, they wouldn't even realize they had to repeat the question again or anything like that. And they would be saying at that time, "Have you ever embezzled the funds of an employer?" You see, or some such thing. And the person says, he's getting kind of bored with this, you know. He says, you know, it falls. And they write down, "Embezzled funds of employer." And go on to the next question. Now, an idiocy of this character, let me tell you some more about this instrument. An idiocy of this character is going on in the United States at this moment. If it weren't so sad and tragic, one could laugh about it. And you will laugh too. You probably won't laugh so well until you yourself conduct this experiment. And this is what is known as compartmenting questions, and something you will have to know in doing goals assessment. The compartmentation of questions. The fellow turns in a goal. "I would like to be a fireman and crawl up ladders and rescue beautiful women." That's the goal. So you come to it on the goals list. And by the way, these goals are always put down in the fellow's own words. He'll amend them, but when he wants to amend them, you amend them and add that amendment as a new goal. So you are reading along his goals list to him, and you come down to this one. You come down the list, and you've covered now maybe 75 goals, and 20 of them are still registering after a brief repetitive read, and you've gone on, and the remainder, the 55, have sort of dropped out, and you're just feeling fine. You come to this one. You want to be a fireman and crawl up ladders and rescue beautiful women. Only you read it this way. You want to be a fireman, crawl up ladders, and rescue beautiful women. And you get a fall. And you say it again. You want to be a fireman, and crawl up ladders, and rescue beautiful women. Fall. You say, well, that one stays in. Give it a slant. Mark, that one's in. You read it a few more times than that, I think. But it looked like it was getting a stronger read. Let's say it, after you read it two or three times, it was getting pretty, it was getting tougher. More reaction, more fall, more theta bob, more rock slam, more something. So you just left it in, and you said that was it, and you went on to the next goal. And the next time you come by this thing, you read it, and by George, it's still in. And you go tell somebody, you say, you know what his goal is to be a fireman. The way you handle these categoried goals is you pull them apart and you go over them like this. You've read the whole goal, you see. You do read that whole goal a couple, three times. Thing continues to read. Now let's find out what's wrong with this thing. And you say you want to be a fireman. You want to be a fireman. You want to be. That's the end of that. That's the end of that read. It just disappeared. You say, good. Crawl up ladders. You want to crawl up ladders. Crawl up ladders. Crawl up ladders. That's the end of that one. That's the end of that one. Rescue beautiful women. Rescue beautiful women. Rescue beautiful women. Ah, that's what we were falling on. You want to rescue beautiful women. Ah, that's good. That's good. Now, because it fell apart otherwise, let's be just a little cleverer. And let's say to rescue. To rescue. To rescue. That disappears. And what was he falling on? Beautiful women, beautiful women, beautiful women. As what healthy male wouldn't. So this whole goal disintegrated except beautiful women. Now, usually the PC will now volunteer, yes, I'd sure like to know some beautiful women. You put that down as a new goal. Got it? That's getting rid of them by compartmentation. Got it? Now, some real, I wouldn't even dignify them by calling them knuckleheads, wogs, drifting around in various places, have been let loose with an e-meter over in the United States. And they've got it all figured out now that everybody has been PDH'd, and that everybody has PDH'd everybody, and they're spreading it all over the place and telling everybody that everybody has been PDH'd. And they prove it this way. They put the person on a meter, and they say, have you ever been a victim of PDH? And the person says, what's that? Well, have you ever been a victim of pain drug hypnosis? Oh, they get a nice fall. Here we go. Well, who did it? Who did it? Who did it? Was it Ron? Was it DiDiego? Was it Dick Halpern? Peter Hemery do it? All of a sudden, they say, Frank Sullivan do it? Get a big fall! We've got a PDH here by Frank Sullivan. Well, believe me, we might have. Teaching is not implanting, but teaching on the whole track often came to implanting. You never had time to teach somebody where all the leads were in a tube room of a spaceship. And there were 800,000 different leads and connectors to all the electronic equipment. So you said zip with the needle, and you turned on the super tape recorders, and it went off at a high whine, and you played it over to them hard, and done it a few times. What do you know? They'd be able to go up and hit lead this and lead that, and maybe throw it on and fix up this and put it in that. And actually, there are people around who've gotten so used to being trained that way that we have today a thing called Dormaphone, which, by the way, doesn't work on anybody who didn't ever teach anybody this way. Doesn't work. Learn the Spanish language overnight. Well, now, if I know all about this, why don't I sock some sodium pentothal in my arm or something of the sort, or take a couple of Nimbutol sleeping tablets and put a pair of earphones on and turn on a record that repeats how to speak the Spanish language. I do this. It happens right now because there's a ship down in Las Palmas. I'll have to repair using the Spanish language that I picked up some Linguaphone records, and I happen to be listening to them wide awake. I'm brushing up my Spanish. When I first listened to the records, they were a terrible blur. I couldn't tell one word from another. Now it's getting so that I actually can differentiate the difference between the alumno and the professor. Trouble with me in Spanish is I have enough overts against the Spanish people that I have a hard time hearing them. That's true. Any young Roman officer in back in the old days had a hard time listening. Anyhow, I don't mean to re-stimulate anybody. All right, well, why don't I use this type of education? Well, I just never got used to it. Why don't we use this type of education in Scientology? Well, nobody. If Scientology is an education of reason, not an education of location. Auditing is a practice of understanding, judgment, and application. It is not a practice of locating and repairing a bunch of leads. You understand? It isn't teaching some soldier the gun parts. It leaves him with the initiative to handle weapons. Big difference there, you see. So all somnolent education is limited to the pat solutions or locations to the questions. Now, if they were all pat solutions, and everything was all pat in all directions, it was mostly locational, nomenclature, and category, and where found, you can do it. The Thetans have been doing it on the whole track forever. I mean, as long as we've had time, this process has been going on. But some people have become very specialized in doing only this. And those people set up a machine that furnish an implant for any given situation. And will answer with name, rank, and serial number, exact date, time, location, situation, and text. 5 or 6 times over the last 9 years, there have been big fads going around with this, and anybody who has used this as a consistent and continual means of education. Nothing vicious about it. They just used it as a means and method of education, that's all. Can set up a machine that will respond. It'll give an implant for any given situation. But that is much rarer. Let's go back to how you use an e-meter on this other thing, and this will amuse you far more. If I've stepped on any toes while I've been saying this, I'm very sorry. But it is simply usually used for educational purposes. You got a new crew aboard the spaceship, and not a single cotton picking one of them knows anything about spaceflight. What is the best way to handle this crew? You shove them underneath the proper speakers, and you give them the proper drug, and it all runs off at a high roar, and all of a sudden you have a totally educated spacecraft crew. Right now you could probably get a Vizio of lying in a nice bunk on a spaceship, and it's got a speaker over your head, and it's playing violin music that is very soft and soothing, and at the same time giving you the regulations and identity and so forth, which you exactly are supposed to occupy, all of the duties, regulations, pertaining to these duties, your relationship to other crew members, everything that has to do with your job. And finally, you get lazy enough, and you say, well, that's a good thing, and you get up out of there and say, I'm the first mate. Matter of fact, you have a society right here at the present moment which is going into this particular line. So don't feel abusive about it, because every time you even captain a spaceship, you've had something to do with this. But I'm talking about somebody who's made a good specialty out of it, who's figured them out, who has used it consistently and continually, or who has practically never done anything else along whole and enormous stretches of track. Those people will develop an identity which gives implants. They'll implant themselves. They can come up with an implant for any given situation. That is rarer. That is rarer. But it is not rarer than 5% of the human race. Well, you wouldn't call that terribly rare, then. You just say it's a bit scarce. And almost anybody could be restimulated with auditing up to a point of where they produce some kind of a reaction on this thing. Almost anybody. But let's take compartmented question and look this thing over. Have you ever been a victim of pain drug hypnosis? Fall. Who did it to you? Frank Sullivan. Fall. That's our proof. That's all you'd have to do, isn't it? Now, actually, to clear up and get kind of mucky, and it's awfully hard to read. And if you really don't know an e-meter very well, you don't notice the sporadic falls that you get on this repeated question. Have you ever been a victim of pain drug hypnosis? Who gave it to you? Frank Sullivan. Did Frank Sullivan give you this? If you're not used to an e-meter, you don't notice that the thing reads kind of weirdly. If you've got hold of an individual, seeing the meter, or something of this sort, who's got a good machine on this particular basis, it'll date it. It'll make it all reasonable and logical and set the whole thing up. Where do you get an engram bank from, huh? Actually, you yourself are making the engram bank. But you wouldn't have to erase it if it wasn't being made on a via. If it was being made directly and created directly by you, it'd just blow, 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 blow. You'd never have to erase an engram, would you? Factually, it's produced by a machine. There are machines that produce pictures. The Satan's got them. They're invisible. He's got them stucked away under his left armpit or something of the sort. And they produce these pictures. And it's a machine. All right, all you had to do is specialize that machine a little bit and it'll produce a PDH. At will. I could take one of such a person and actually get PDHs until it became foolish to the person. Okay? And one of the cures of it is to date other people and other PDHs until we find out that their mother and father both PDHed them, and everybody else has PDHed them all the way up the line. You could rework this machine until you made the machine practically go goofy, giving you new PDHs. You got it? In other words, it dubs in a PDH. That's all. And that's dub in, just as such. Whereas the person is actually giving you perfectly valid engrams, when it comes to this particular type of engram, it's a dub. You got the idea? You know, there are a lot of young girls walking around right now. You say, well, get a mental image picture of your father, and they get a hairy ape, or they get something else, see? In other words, they got a machine that will dub in fathers. Well, so there are machines that will dub in PDHs. But that isn't really what I'm talking to you about, because that's more advanced curiosa. And that isn't really what I'm talking about at this particular time, the advanced curiosa. I'm talking about e-meters and this single question, have you ever been a victim of pain, drug, hypnosis? Who did it? Frank Sullivan. Listen, if you're an auditor and you know your business, you know there's such a thing as OW. And you know this, that an e-meter reacts to the auditor's questions. And any question that is near the truth of anything will cause a reaction on the machine. And it is up to you to get a consistent read. You have to ask the smarter question. You have to ask the varied question to polish that read up. And all of a sudden it's reading like mad, and you know exactly what it's reading on. And everything else that it might have been reading on disappears. All right. Victim? How many people do you think will get a reaction on the word victim? How many people do you think will get a reaction on the word pain? How many people will get a reaction on the word drugs? How many people will get a reaction on the word hypnosis? Or hypnotism or hypnotists? And if they've had a few overts, or if they've read some of his literature, how many people do you think would get a reaction on Frank Sullivan? No, all a question proves when it reacts on an e-meter is that it or some part of it has charge on it. Or the question is near some question which will have charge on it. Got the idea? Now, by varying your question, you can smooth out the read. As you become used to the instrument, you'll notice that it reacts sporadically and occasionally on something. Well, you just shape your questions around and change it around until you get consistent. Always the same read, always the same read. You can only keep it reading the same, however, if you practically muzzle the PC. The second he starts imparting information, the read blows up. Because if he answers the right auditing question, the read blows up. But of course, because he answered it and the read blew up entirely, you also know what you were asking. Don't you see? You know what was right. So with the PC totally gagged, you could, by questioning, PC not permitted to talk, actually with a gag on. And you have to gag PCs if you want to carry this thing out to its extremity. It's a good drill. And they get too interested. My favorite mechanism for newspaper reporters these days, by the way, is to find an automobile accident they've been in. They evidently have all been in automobile accidents. Where the accident occurred, who was hurt in the accident, where they were hurt in the accident, and find out the whole lot, such as the make of the car, and all of that sort of thing, without letting the reporter say a word to me. And man, does it make citizens out of them. The somatics turn on and everything turns on and they say, well, how did you know? But actually, you can't get much further than them being hurt or somebody in the car being hurt. Then they all of a sudden start going off like small firecrackers, you know? And they say, well, yes, well, how did you know that? Well, you haven't actually had a chance to prove that you were a total wizard. They're now convinced of it. How did you prove that? What do you know? Yes, as a matter of fact, it was an old Rolls Royce, and it went off the edge of a cliff down in Devonshire, and yeah, that's right, there were other people in the car, all right, girls they were, and so forth, and I didn't ever realize this before, but I must have gotten jammed under the dashboard. You know, I've got a terrible pain here. Yeah, and I must have been jammed under the dashboard. I never realized that before. you know, and they go limping out. Of course, such a thing dies out in the course of about 3 days, but they don't go back to the office and write that story that the editor told them to write to clobber Scientology, mostly because they can't now sit down comfortably. It restimulates them. This is a very effective way of handling reporters, by the way. It's a real convincer. Similarly, this other drill is a marvelous convincer to somebody who believes he has been PDH'd. Have you ever been a victim of pain drug hypnosis? Well, now, just as you would in goals compartmentation, you say the word victim. You ever been a victim? You ever been a yeah, I've been a victim. Yeah, well, that's the end of that read. How do you feel about pain?
Oh, no, I don't want anything to do with pain.
Read. And they say, I don't want anything to do with pain. I've had an awful lot of trouble. And during my early youth, I was in agony most of the time. They had my teeth in braces and so forth. And that one drops out. And then say, well, how do you feel about drugs? Oh, God. Every time you see a medico, they never treat anything. They just shoot you full of drugs and you stagger around. And if they'd only have gone away in the first place, you never called them, why, you probably could have died peaceably or gotten well or something of the sort. Yeah, I don't care much for drugs. That's gone. All right. Hypnotism. You ever been hypnotized? There wasn't any charge on it in the first place, and it's dead. Now, say the question, have you ever been a victim of pain drug hypnosis? The needle is totally motionless. Now you say Frank Sullivan. It falls. You say, have you ever had any overts on Frank Sullivan? Have you ever thought any unkind thoughts? And they say, well, who wouldn't? Yes, I have. Because, as a matter of fact, Frank Sullivan has been talking about being PDH from the first ACC. He's telling me all about PDHs, and he goes around and talks to people about PDHs, and it upsets people, and they don't like to get their own PDHs terribly restimulated, only he's so convincing about it. His message is, you have been PDHed. You have been. The reason you are being self-determined right this minute is because you have been PDHed. So, with this kind of a thing, of course, a guy gets unkind thoughts. He says, this guy's nuts. You know, although he might continue to be pleasant. And the person says, yes, I've got lots of overts in that line. I've thought a lot of unkind thoughts in that particular line. And you say, well, how do you feel about Frank Sullivan? You get no motion to mount anything on the needle. You've kind of blown it. Now you say, well, has Frank Sullivan ever PDH'd you? Now you'll get another surge. Well, have you ever thought anything bad about Sullivan going around telling everybody that you've been PDH'd? Well, yes, I have. Well, has Frank Sullivan PDH'd you? And that's now no. Now you say to the person, have you ever been a victim of pain, drug, hypnotism? No. Have you ever been given a pain, drug, hypnotic implant by Frank Sullivan? And it's no. What was it falling on? It was falling on connected restimulators. And as soon as you blew off and the PC actually answered directly what you were talking about. Now, supposing he had been PDH'd and he told you an awful lot of stuff. Well, yes, and he answered all these things. Yes, I've been worried about those things and that sort of thing. And the fall canceled off on all of them. And you said, well, have you ever been PDH'd by Frank Sullivan? And you got a hell of a fall. You know, you'd never be able to clear that fall, never be able to clear that fall at all if the person had no recollection of ever having been PDH'd by Frank Sullivan, if he had been. It would continue to fall. That would be that. Now, this becomes a case for auditing. How do you audit it? You put Frank Sullivan on the general prehab scale, and you simply run him flat. You assess him for level, just as you would an SOP goals terminal. You find out where that level it falls. You put together an auditing command on Frank Sullivan, and you just run that out. And then when that tone arm stops moving, as it very well might after about 4 or 5 waggles, see, it might only be a few dozen commands, see? You find your new level, and you flatten that, and you find your new level, flatten that, and all of a sudden you can't get any reaction of any kind, either on being PDH'd or anything else. It will have blown. That is the magic of the prehab scale. Marital Scientology, just going from the ridiculous to the sublime. As I said before, this thing about PDH would be amusing if it weren't so kind of sad. It's kind of knuckleheaded, you know? It's kind of terrible thinking of some people running around madly trying to tell everybody and convince everybody that they have been PDH'd, because they're simply dramatizing their own overts, whether now in this life or on the backtrack, and they are worried about them. Don't you see? And when they've got to sell a bill of goods of this particular character and make it their life work, they might as well be writing out a confession and putting it in the hands of every Scientologist they talk to. The guy says, I've been PDH'd, and yap, 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 and you've got to believe me, and all that sort of thing. If he's making this, he's not telling an auditor this. He's not going and getting auditing. He's just telling everybody this. He's all the same as writing out confessions and signing them and putting them in Scientologists' hands. I have PDH'd the living Christ out of people for ages. You see, I'm pro. That's what he's doing. That's what he's doing. Well, it's all right. But people who have done PDHs, ordinarily on the whole track, in the best of thoughts, that was the best possible thing to do at the particular pace of time. So as a result, if they got a machine that'll produce PDHs, so what? It'll all come out in running SOP goals. Why worry about it? Furthermore, if some guy did PDH somebody, let's say that Sullivan did go ahead and hold down somebody and slap him and cuff him and put him under drugs and shock him and put in hypnotic commands and run some patch together, tape to him that told him to go and take HCA courses, that wouldn't be a bad implant, by the way. And if he did this, look, nothing can happen to you in one lifetime. Not even a PDH, not even an electric shock from a psychiatrist and so forth that you can't handle now. All you got to do is find out, locate the fellow who did it, and run him on the prehab scale and flatten the various levels and let's get him to PDH. Interesting, huh? Or just in the course of running SOP goals, clear the guy and it'll blow off. It's nothing to worry about. And I'm sure that no smart Scientologist, now that we've got clearing going, and we've got cases running so well, would waste his time PDHing anybody. Look at all that hard effort that would just blow off in a short auditing session. We're actually getting faster today than they can be laid in. Used to be that we took them out much more slowly than, you know, an engram in general was erased much more slowly than it was laid in. Well, you look at the number of engrams, just count the number of engrams that must blow in the process of clearing a person. And it is some binary digit factor. The factor, you could start up on this wall here and write one and then zeros, column after column after column, the whole length of that wall, and so forth, clear down to the bottom of it, and you would not have stated a number large enough to give the person the number of engrams that he'd have. That number would not be large enough. And when you can take and blow this up in the course of, at the outside, a couple of hundred hours of auditing, holy cats, how many engrams is that per minute of auditing, of actual effective auditing? It's some fantastic number. It must be billions and billions of engrams, in fact. So who would waste their time? But once more, going from the ridiculous to the sublime, what I'm about to give you is the birth of marital Scientology. Not really its birth, but it's grown up and got some pants and skirts on it. We had marital Scientology the day we had the husband and wife sit down across from each other with an auditor auditing both of them and getting off their overts and withholds against each other. That did an enormous amount to patch up marriages and actually could be considered its birth. Now you can put pants and skirts on marital Scientology, and some auditor setting himself up this way could do absolute marvelous things. All you do is take the husband by name and run him on the prehab scale, take the wife by name and run her on the prehab scale, and that's the end of the difficulties of that marriage. Of course, since the fellow doesn't want to be married, that's his idea, and he doesn't have to be run this way. At the same time, if he wanted to get unmarried, this would also be the smoothest way to get him unmarried. Got the idea? Either way. But it would certainly patch up the marriage. You got the idea? Take the difficulties off the lineup. Because in the course of running, it would run the OWs off. And what do you know? It's such a tiny, tiny, tiny short track. What is it? They've been married for 10 years. Wow. 10 years against 200 trillion. Doesn't sound like much. So it's no track. And what you're doing is instead of getting these little tiny 2.5 horsepower outboard motors and attaching them to the Queen Mary, that used to be auditing. See? And these little tiny outboard motors are running mad and heating their bearings and so forth to push the Queen Mary. Instead of doing that now, we have a 10,000 horse Mercedes Benz pushing a rowboat. One of the precautions we have to take is it doesn't crush the rowboat. The precaution we take is do a technically perfect job of auditing and keep your rudiments cleaned up the way I've been talking to you about. All right. How long do you think it'd take to clear up that much track on a couple? Damn short period of time. With a little experience and knowing your business, you could absolutely guarantee to set up somebody as far as this is concerned. You could absolutely guarantee. You say, lead pipe singe. What would you do? You'd take the husband's name or the wife's name or something like that. Now, you could assess this out one way or the other, but now you'd be getting into another project. No, all we're going to do is a non-assess on the terminal beyond just the identity of the terminal. You got the idea? See, this is the light brush-off. Husband's name is Joe Thompson. All right. We just take Joe Thompson and we assess Joe Thompson up on the pre-half scale and down on the pre-half scale. And going up and down, the level failed endure, knocked both times. We make up an auditing command about the failed endurance of Joe Thompson and our PC's relationship to him. It may flatten in 10 commands. It may flatten in 10 or 20 commands. But as soon as the motion goes out of the tone arm, reassess. And then take the motion out of that tone arm and then reassess it on the pre-half scale. We're not talking about very much auditing, are we? Of course, the case has got to be in the kind of a shape where they would talk to the auditor and interested in their own case before you do that. You can do that too. You can run a general pre-half scale and make them do a Joe Berg security check and they'll be talking to you. You know, doing a Joe Berg security check is not an overt. Some people will look on it as such. It's about the nicest thing you can do to anybody. All you're giving him is his life. Now, let's take a little brief summary of this. Mr. E-meter is a precision instrument. Mr. Auditor is sometimes imprecise. Mr. E-meter registers on anything the PC hears. The auditor sometimes doesn't adjudicate what the PC has heard. The E-meter clears on everything the PC answers absolutely right. And it remains muddled on everything the PC doesn't answer absolutely right. It's as clear as that. The E-meter is a precision instrument, but auditors and pre-clears are prone to error. Now, you, in your study of cases and E-meters and so forth, have certain drills which you must undertake. Even though they seem to be silly drills, they may seem to be silly, but I want you here to make sure that you do these. All right.